Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kia Ora Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 7, season 14. How's your heart rate? How is your coffee intake? How is your life after the weekend that we've just had on the final round of WRC? We were giddy with it last week. Obviously, we had Chris Meek excited. We had Ryan Champion excited. We had Dean Herrigs excited. And my big concern was how Julian Porter was going to be able to manage all the stats, stay awake, and keep it all together. Now, I made reference to that. So I thought, well, we'll get him on this week. Hello, Julian Porter.
How you doing?
We're all right. We're all right. Ryan Champion's there as well. Hello, Ryan.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm good, thank you. And I'm not in a car park this week, Tony. You'll be pleased to know.
Yeah. There's a bit of form. For some reason, Jules, Ryan keeps on turning up in McDonald's car parks. I'm not saying it's anything to do with his waistline, but that's all I'm saying.
We
removed the mystique. Chris was with us last week. We had Chris Meek on with us for a bit. And Chris was obviously in Andorra. And he was, you know, he was calm and relaxed. He was talking about the excitement of what's to come, and then he was talking about his predictions, and Ryan was in a McDonald's car park just outside.
Yeah, hang on a minute. In my defence, if you need to find a car park to park in quickly at Gatwick, where'd you go?
Okay, all right, fine.
There we go.
I'm not going to split hairs with you. Anyway, we're not here to talk about car parks. That's not why we're keeping Jules from going to bed.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
He just doesn't want to go to bed yet anyway, because that'll just confuse him, so he needs to stay up as long as possible.
Yeah, that's it.
Jules, we've not had you on this season. Bex has been on, and we've got various other people on, and you've been a busy boy. And before we go any further, you've been an integral part of All Live, and firstly, congratulations, because I think All Live you've probably come into your own. I think it's been perfect for you. But has it exceeded everything you thought it was going to be on Monte Carlo?
I mean, we did one morning's test last year in Portugal. So that was like May 2017. And I'll be honest, it didn't go particularly well, but it gave the bosses enough of an idea of kind of like, yeah, we're going to go for this. We all went to London about this time, or just before Australia last year, like, right, this is what we're going to do. And I'm thinking, Disneyland, Monte Carlo, Thursday night, 8 o'clock. It's going to be interesting, this is. You know, if you're going to start anything anywhere, Monte Carlo's probably not the easiest place in the world to start it. But it was lovely to start with. I mean, the first two stages we got helicopter shots in one, no interviews at the end of one. We never got onboards in the other, but we got interviews. But we still got pictures. In the end, there was only one stage in the whole season that we did not cover in some shape or form. And that was a super special in Sardinia, which was kind of slightly out of our hands, but we won't go into that. But one stage out of the whole season, I don't think it's too bad when it was announced and launched in the Autosport show, people were sitting there thinking, yeah, righto, this is going to happen. I'll be totally honest with you, even in Monte Carlo on Thursday, we were like kind of big, deep breath of whether it was going to happen. And yeah, it was, our boss sent us an email, 250 stages, 325 hours of TV. That's some going. That is, as you know, and all the listeners know, it's not a race circuit. It's not the simplest thing to cover. Of course, it could be 48, 50K stages, and you've got an aeroplane with a 10-kilometer footprint. You can't be everywhere. So it's been a huge thing. And yeah, the people in the front of the camera, there's five or six of us regulars. There's another 120 people behind there working, making sure it all goes out. So it's a huge effort.
As seasons go, and I think Ryan and I spoke about this the other week, as seasons go, obviously we still call them the 17 cars. It's almost like we had, you know, 17 to kind of let everybody to kind of get bed in and everything else. Of course, it was a fantastic season for M Sport, as this season was, which we're going to come to in a second. But everybody was kind of bedded in. Everybody kind of knew what they were getting now with the cars, and, you know, the cars were a little bit more developed. What a season to have All Live.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things last year when we got the new cars. It was talked about, and they said, we've got to act now whilst the World Championship's on and up. And that was why it was not, I don't think it was pushed through any quicker, but that's why it was definitely targeted for this year. And this year delivered probably even more than last year because it went to the penultimate stage of the season. Fortunately, for a commentator, it was quite relaxed, that power stage, because I actually was slightly worried we were going to have three of them going into there and having to work out a load of maths. But yeah, Neuville dropped it two stages from the end, then Tanak dropped it one stage from the end, and then Ogier could just drive through the final stage, even though he wanted to win that stage, and he did. A true mark of a champion of, right, I've got this, I'll go and prove to everyone that I have been hampered all weekend with my road position, and I'll go and win the power stage.
Jules, we'll talk about Australia again a little bit more in a minute, but for the people listening that probably haven't got an idea of the infrastructure it takes to bring all life to the TV screens, give us an idea of what goes into actually producing those shows, those live stages, the amount of people, the amount of equipment needed.
Well, I mean, we've got, I think it's about 100. It depends on the event. Long haul, we try and take a few less, but like European events, we're running about 110 people in total. That's for post-production, so that's your 52s, your 26s, all live, that's everything. But virtually everyone's doing about three or four jobs now. I have five different jobs that I can do over a weekend, and producers are coming in and they're doing a bit of post-production stuff. They're doing all live. Commentators like myself and John, we're doing a bit of everything. There's not many people who just do one job now. And I'd say an average of about 100, 110 people per event. 20 hours of helicopter, filming-wise, an aeroplane that we have used the same aeroplane on every event. We flew it to Argentina, we flew it to Mexico. Well, it flew to Argentina, Mexico, and Australia. It took 6 days for it to get to Australia, 6 days for it to get back. And that's because we know we can use that plane. We know it can fly in bad weather. We know we can fit everything in that plane. That has been one of the biggest costs to get that plane, not just to Europe, but mainly the long hauls. People start building everything in the service park on Saturday. That's when the first people arrive for the crew-wise to start cabling the service park for the studio. And then you have an OB truck, so an outside broadcast truck for the all-live, which then doubles up as the live TV. But the cable has got to go from there into the service park. Now, in some places, the studio to those trucks can be a kilometre away, depending on how the rally is and how the setup is. So they've got to kind of like fibre stuff across, or they've got to cross dual carriageways in the town centres, like in Sardinia. We have to cross like the main streets. So it has to be, like, poles have to be erected to go across, and huge amount of work goes into it. And yeah, there's a couple of times where the sound man might still be in picture when we come back on air, or I'm still doing something that we either shouldn't be, or we kind of cut to us when we're not really ready for it, or we lose a picture, for example. But yeah, just a massive amount of work that goes into it. And, you know, the live TV stages that are shown, like, not all live ones, but the live TV, like in Finland, the boys and girls, they did Thursday night in Harju, Friday night in Harju. They then bailed out of Harju on Friday night in Jyväskylä. I think it was something like 1 o'clock in the morning they got out of there, but they're set up in the live stage the next day for running at 8 o'clock in the morning. They've done an all-nighter, and then they move out of that stage on Saturday into Ruomäki for both runs, which the first one's at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. They're working 20 odd hours a day. They're sleeping in the truck sometimes because it's not worth going back to the hotel. So yeah, we get the glory side of it, but there's an awful lot of people working a huge amount of hours, and yeah, sleeping, as I said, in the truck sometimes. There's a hotel booked for them, but by the time they get to the hotel and back, they'll have half an hour in the room, so they just sleep in the trucks just to get themselves more sleep.
But, sounds like proper rallying, actually, to be honest. That takes me back to old school rallying.
It is, yeah. I mean, we all run Monte Carlo stuff and things like that, and you add the weather in, but Sweden. But we're doing an average of a live stage on a Thursday night, then a Saturday, and then a Sunday. Sometimes two on Saturday, sometimes two on Sunday. That was what we had in Australia. Like in Finland, that was what we had. They had Harju twice, and then another four stages. So six live stages with like an OB situation. So there's a truck on the side of the stage, and that is cabled for like a kilometre and a half from the truck. And then there's RF equipment with a satellite at the end of the stage for the interview. And it's big. And the logistics behind it is just quite amazing, how the guys and the girls get everybody around and they swap. I mean, when I was doing stage ends, like in GB, I went out in the morning with my crew, then came back halfway to Rissin. I would then meet Molly, met us there. I took the car back to service that she was in. She went in the other car back to the stages. Germany, I did two stages on Friday morning, both with different camera crews. I got left somewhere, picked up by somebody, because of the logistics of getting different people into different places. It was like, we're leaving you there, you're going to get picked up, and then you're going to go somewhere else. And yeah, there's a lot of work goes into it. And you're always going to get some people. We didn't cover WRC2 every rally, because unfortunately you can't. We have 15 onboard camera kits. They're over 100 grand a piece. So we can't have unlimited of them. So we have 15. Every World Rally car gets one. Then whatever's left goes into WRC2. So we normally run the first couple of WRC2 cars, particularly Friday, because there's no point in running a WRC2 car that's 15th on the road, because we can't wait that long to get that car. We take the first two or the first three. And then if they drop way down the leaderboard, we consider moving the onboard camera into another car. But that's a big job, and we have to make sure the car has all the right equipment in it, wiring loom-wise, to fit our system. Skoda, M-Sport, people like that, they build them into the wiring looms now, the kits and the plugs, so it's not too bad. But following WRC2 and things like that, yeah, I think it's €89 for the season. If we were to put onboard cameras into WRC3 juniors and follow them, you'd be paying €289, because it's €1,500 an hour or something for the helicopter, and then the plane, and the plane's got to refuel and things like that. So, yeah, we would like to show more, but it's just not economically viable, not for the fan as well as us, because we just wouldn't sell it if we started to put the price up too much.
I mean, it gives us a good idea of just what it takes. And so it's a phenomenal amount of effort to put on what we've seen this year. I mean, you've been fortunate enough to cover the WRC in real depth this year. It's been one of the closest battles, obviously, we've seen for a number of years. What would be a personal highlight for you, having seen the season close up?
Turkey was just an amazing event. First time there, we drove the stages on the recce. We're like, this is going to be difficult. And then on Saturday morning, you had Neville disappearing, working on his car for half an hour, 40 minutes, and going OTL. And Ogier breaks the car the next day, fixes his car to 95%, then goes and wins the next stage. And then the mechanics fix his car, Elvin fixes his own car, and then Seb goes and crashes. And that was an incredible kind of story. But Spain, for me, was probably the greatest World Rally we've seen in 10 or 12 years. Six drivers within 20 seconds for 3 days until basically two stages from the end. And it changed. Lapillo was virtually leading in stage four. Then he dropped a tenth of the puncture. Then he was leading again 24 hours later. Then he hit the barrier and punctured the tire. I've just never seen a rally where people were changing. It wasn't because people were crashing out. It was just people taking gambles in the weather or not being brave in the rain and things like that. Spain was probably the greatest rally I've ever seen. It was just phenomenal of what was going to happen next. Yeah, Loeb winning was super special as well for me, because I just thought it was so cool he came back and won. But there's just so many different things and different stories that happened and played out. All live-wise, Finland, Marcus Gronholm announcing that he's going to try and do Rally Sweden next year in the Toyota Yaris. That's a pretty big news story that we captured that no one else knew about at the time. We didn't know about it. We asked the question of why he hadn't done Finland. He goes, well, I tried to do Sweden in 2018. There wasn't a car left. We're already planning for Sweden 2019. Just little things. We got a few little nuggets. That was, for me, that was probably one of the biggest stories of getting Gronholm announcing that he's trying to do Sweden next year. But that's what all life's meant to be about, is to try and find out those things. And yeah, we've dug in quite a few places. We've kind of not upset people, but we've got in the faces sometimes of kind of like, you're here again. Yeah, we've got a lot of hours to fill, so 10 or 12 hours a day, so we are going to be in a lot of places. But the drivers and the teams, I have to be honest, they have taken it very, very well. They have taken it very, very well, which is great.
Now, we'll talk about winners in a minute, but we had a three-way battle for the World Championship, as we all know. At one point, you would have sworn Thierry Neuville was going to win it. I think after Turkey, you would have sworn Ait Tanak was going to win it. And then Sébastien Ogier obviously pops up and does what he does best. But I want to start with Thierry Neuville. Thierry Neuville arguably should have won the championship last year. He arguably should have won it this year. How do you think this is going to affect Thierry Neuville? Can he take the championship, or do you think he's just lost his best opportunity?
This year, probably, you never know what's coming around the corner, you know, as well as I do. But, I mean, this year was a massive opportunity for him. 27 points clear at the mid-season. But the Hyundai is such a good car. It's actually I believe it's too well engineered. And it doesn't like super smooth roads like you have in Finland, like you have in Spain, Germany. It doesn't seem to grip in the front end on those super smooth roads. And they have three tough rallies in the second half of the season. Finland, they've never gone well. Germany, then Spain. And it was always going to be difficult. Yeah, he was unlucky in Turkey. But then you make your own luck, don't you? It's kind of like, I don't know, but Neuville probably lost the championship by running first on the road. Not enough experience of doing it, and not quite good enough. But I was saying at the mid-season, he was doing, even Germany, I mean, Turkey, yeah, he was unlucky, but to the end of Germany, he was doing everything right. Even though the car wasn't perfect in Finland and Germany, he was doing what Ogier and Loeb always did, maximising what they could get. And in Germany, he started Sunday morning in fifth, finished in second, just by staying on the road and sitting there thinking, right, this is not really going my way. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This is the best I can get right now. Let's see where I am Sunday lunchtime. And people would fall out, people would have a problem, or he would have a good stage time, things would gel. And he, at that point, he was doing an Ogier on Ogier, just staying in the game, keeping himself ticking over, getting points, picking them up. But it just fell apart at the end. And yeah.
Jules, sorry.
Psychologically, he was beaten.
There's a couple of things that we've mentioned on the podcast quite a few times now. One, you've cleared up that we now all have to change how we pronounce Hyundai. Thank you for that. That's something that's evolved over the last 2 years. I think we all called them Hyundai. Now it's Hyundai, I think, isn't it?
I think Hyundai is how they say it in South Korea, Hyundai. But right. I mean, you talk to people within the team and they say Hyundai.
Oh, that's all right. That, so. I don't feel as bad. But we've said this, or I've said this, so I'll take ownership of this. That perhaps the other thing that with Thierry's season is his teammates. And his teammates, you know, there was a lack of consistency, obviously, with the car share, and Andreas just not having anywhere near what we thought he was going to have.
Yeah, that ultimately, I mean, I don't know how many points Elvin kind of gifted, because it's very hard to work out, but Elvin helped Seb a lot. And Andreas didn't have that help. Did not have that help. Sorry, not Andreas, Thierry. Because Andreas had, I mean, you would never have thought coming into this season, Mikkelsen was going to have the shocker that he's had. He's been quick. He's led runners. You know, look, Friday lunchtimes, and he's been in the lead. And he's just fallen away. Mistake either by him or issues with the car. And I've never known him have such a bad year. And strangely, the third sharing car had better results than the number two permanent car. I mean, Mikkelsen had one podium. Padden had two. I think Sordo had two. And it just didn't work for Mikkelsen. I'm not sure what Andreas' contract is for next year. I know he has one, but I was being told early on in the year that it wasn't a guarantee for like every event, so to speak. That was only for like 2018. But I don't know. Mikkelsen's management are very shrewd, so I don't think they'll be worried too much about it. He just needs to kind of get on with it. But I think Andreas' championship was going wrong very early on. He did three rallies in 2017 in that car. and led each one and had the upper hand over Neuville. But Neuville's championship was virtually over, and I think he was a beaten man last three rounds of 2017, and maybe didn't put all the effort in. Mickelson turns up thinking, huh, I had him in my back pocket in those three rallies. Happy days, I'm on my way. Neuville re-energises himself in the off-season, comes in thinking, as Ryan's already said, probably should have won in 17, I am going to win in 18, and just set the world alight and blew everyone else away in the team. And I don't think Mickelson could cope with that straight away, and it took him a while to try and catch up. Then, as you all know, you start making mistakes and you start overdriving. You start hitting stuff that you shouldn't be. So I think psychologically he was probably beaten by, he was surprised how quick Neuville was in the first three or four rounds.
Do you think, just going back to the point you made about, you know, obviously we know Andreas has drove, you know, various generations of World Rally cars from a very, very tender age. You've just been making reference to the fact, obviously, the high-end eye almost is potentially over-engineered. Do you think maybe that as well, you know, it's just because we've said this and we've said it on the podcast as well, you know, some drivers just click with certain cars and some drivers, it just doesn't work. And all of a sudden you put them in another car and they start winning again. And I'm not saying that's going to happen to Andreas. You know, I'm sure, you know, he's going to still be at Hyundai next year. But is this just an instance of just a driver just not getting on with a particular car?
I think so. Yeah. The car's very strange. It's a very understeery car. And you watch Neuville on any onboard, even as high as fifth gear, he's still handbraking, pulling the thing round at the back end to get the front to turn in. And I know that's just, Andreas has told me that's not his driving style. He says, you pull the handbrake maybe first, second or third gear. He says, once you get fourth, fifth, sixth, you're only pulling it to try and save yourself from a major moment or an accident. And he's just so alien to him. And we've got to remember, he had three and a half years of VW Polo, which was probably the greatest ever World Rally car there's been. He's taken some adapting to the Hyundai, and just driving style-wise, and every time he turns up, he's either adjusted his driving style, or they found something in the test that's going to be the thing. But as we all know, testing is one thing, competing is another. You go down the test road 100 times in a day, a car feels the greatest thing in the world. You then turn up on a rally and you've got 300 kilometres of stages, which at 150 you do twice. So it's not the same. And I don't know, they have struggled massively. I'm not saying he's going to struggle again next year, but Neuville is strong. He's massively strong in the mind now. I think 3 years ago, Neuville was demoted to the B team. And then he's fought his way back up and now is a man in demand. And he's a real big confidence guy, isn't he, Bill? And when he has that confidence, he can just put it in there where he needs it.
Hyundai as a team, though, it's fair to say, I think, have still under-delivered over the last 2 years with a car that's always been a potential winner. So we've had Neuville fighting for the championship but not taking it. We've had the manufacturer fighting for the championship not taking it. Other team members may be struggling. Do you think Hyundai maybe need to change their focus, need to change something in the team to grasp at that success? What do you think's missing?
I'm not sure what's missing, but you are right. They have missed opportunities. And it's hard to think that they've missed those opportunities, particularly this year, because they had everything in their pocket until the last two or three rounds. And I'm not sure, because the only thing you could potentially get that is better than Thierry Neuville is Sébastien Ogier, because Neuville's been second in the World Championship now four times. So it's not that he's finishing fifth or sixth. He is the next best driver if you look at results. I mean, yes, some people argue Chris Meek's a faster driver. Maybe Oit Tanak is a better driver. You know what I mean? But Neuville consistently delivers. Australia was the first rally this year where he did not score a point in the World Championship. And World Championships delivered over 13, next year 14 rounds. Neuville will bring you points home virtually every weekend. And that is what. But they just, I just think they crumbled. Just at the end, it crumbled. Pressure, whatever you want to call it.
I don't know, but it just went away from the last couple of events. I mean, I believe there was one major turning point in the World Championship, which regarded Ogier, but we're on a high and dying level at the minute. We'll get to Ogier soon, but yeah, they let it slip this year.
And Hyundai have a slightly different management structure as well. They do have a real structure, whereas, you know, we've seen M Sport thrive, albeit, you know, with an Ogier driving. But we've seen M Sport thrive with Malcolm Wilson, you know, driving the team. We've now seen Toyota thrive with Tommy Mäkinen driving the team. It's a slightly different makeup at Hyundai, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Hyundai's probably, as you would probably run it, not saying that M Sport and Toyota are wrong, but in theory, Hyundai is how you would kind of expect a team, isn't it? You've got a team principal, then you've got a team manager, and there's chief engineers, there's all that kind of stuff. Whereas Tommy and Malcolm, ex-drivers who now kind of have their own team and run programs for a manufacturer, whether that gives, potentially it means more because it's your name above the door, so to speak, if you get what I mean. It maybe means more. And you only have to look at who's won the championships this year. Tommy with his team winning the manufacturers and Malcolm with his team winning the drivers. Does that tell us anything? I'm not sure. They've been there, then they've got the T-shirt, so to speak. But I don't think Hyundai are doing it wrong, as in the way that they've got it set up, because if you run any business, you've got to have a manager and a top boss and things like that. But Dan's been around for a long, long time. He's guided a lot of successful people around the world, and Alain Prost is no pushover. I mean, he's one of the hardest negotiators in the business. It's Prost. The drivers hate going to try and sort their deals that way because he is a real hard cookie and takes no rubbish either. So I'm not sure what it is. I just don't know what it is. They just do seem to fall down right at the end. And this year was the big one. This year they let it slip.
Now, a team that obviously have just built momentum, took the manufacturer's title. Oit Tänak, we've seen, had a fabulous end to the year. Arguably could have won the last six rallies. An unusual mistake, actually, from Tänak last weekend.
Yeah, I've watched the onboard several times now, and there was a big compression just before he went off, which is also where Latvala, I think, lost his rear bumper in the same compression. And we're not sure, when you listen to the onboard, we're not sure whether something broke in the transmission, because Oit went off considerably faster than everyone else. And yeah, he could have been going down the straight much faster than anyone else, but straight to straight, you all kind of go down it at the same speed. And he went off a lot earlier into the corner as well. So I'm not sure whether something broke in the transmission, be it he lost some drive or I don't know. But he went off a lot quicker and a lot earlier into the corner than anyone else. And then I think he broke reverse gear trying to get it out, because there was an almighty bang when he was in the ditch trying to get out in reverse, because then all of a sudden he had no gears and they had to push him out. But yeah, if I'm honest, listening to the team in an interview we did with them afterwards, there was no need for him to be pushing, because he'd been told if he wasn't in the lead after the penultimate stage, he would be put into the lead with team orders for the power stage. They were ready. They had already had a discussion with Oit and Biari that they would swap positions before the regroup going into the power stage so that Tänak would win in case anything happened to Ogier that they didn't know. Because they finished the power stage, they still had to get back to Coffs Harbour. There was still a road section. So even though Ogier is celebrating at the end of the stage, there was still a road section, which anything could happen on, as we all know. But yeah, I didn't need to be pushing that hard. It was the impression I got from the team. And they were a bit frustrated. But as you say, he could have won every rally from Finland onwards. And GB, again, a little bit of bad luck or a little bit of over-pushing. There was the cars vulnerable at the front end, and there were some big ruts and some big holes appearing. And they told them just to watch out, be careful in any big ruts that you don't scoop the front end up. And he hit that big hole in Sweetland, which took the sump guard off and the bottom half of the radiator as well. So that was disappointing for them. And then the puncture on the wet tyre in Spain. Again, they know, the drivers know they shouldn't be taking massive cuts when they've got those wet tyres on. The sidewall so thin, so vulnerable. Annoyed both times, you say, like GB, Spain, 30-plus second out front each time. He was in another world from Finland onwards. It was quite staggering how he could third on the road, take massive time out of the two in front of him, and then the people behind him as well. It was just, we could have a whitewash next year, depending on how quickly it takes Ogier to get up to speed in the fifth one. We could have a whitewash with Toyota, because Latvala's on pace, we know Mika could be on pace. It could be a Toyota walkover.
I mean, you could almost look at it for Tanak. I mean, yes, he did have a realistic shot at the championship, you know, pre-Rally GB, but then it fell apart. But I guess, as you've just said, he this is arguably his first time fighting right at the front like this consistently. He's maybe made some mistakes in the last few events, but with his speed, that's only going to put him in even better, stronger position for next year, I would say, that he can actually learn from those issues that he's had.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal this year. Stage two, I think it was in Finland, the second a kilometre quicker than anybody else. The stage three in Argentina, it was 3/4 of a second a kilometre. And that's running second and third on the road. You know, he's just taking huge chunks. All three of them, if I'm honest, Neuville, Ogier, Tanak were in another world this year. But then Tanak could have rallies where he was, again, just a fraction of a second per kilometre quicker than each of them. They work on 1/10 of a second per kilometre. Each passing car, the road cleans by 1/10 of a second per kilometre. Tanak's taking 3 or 4/10 of a second out of everybody. You know what I mean? It's just phenomenal. It really is. The car's good. Tanak has to get a lot of praise for the car being so good. He massively changed that car this year with the traction, with the suspension. They came back after the mid-season break with a fresh engine that we all knew was coming. More drivability, more torque. But also what they came with was redesigned suspension and dampers. And Tanak was struggling in the first rally, saying that there wasn't a lot of grip. And the engineer's like, yeah, but that's what it is. And he goes, no, I had more grip in the Fiesta. There's definitely, we can get more grip out of this. And they worked on it. And all of a sudden, Yari and EP were like, that's what traction is now. And they were staggered. And Lappi says, Tanak needs a lot of credit for pushing the engineers and the management. We can have more traction. I know it's available because I've driven a car with it available. So, yeah, that was the big contraction and that new engine at the second half of the year. It's got a lot of poke in that engine, it really has.
We had Chris on last week, and, you know, even Chris said he, you know, like everybody, he raised an eyebrow when Tommy kind of got the gig, not to put too fine a point on it. I think by his own admission, he seems to think that they're possibly a little bit ahead of the curve within the manufacturers this year. But you're in and around them in the service park, and we all know when somebody comes into the service park and they're not playing games. And definitely the impressions I've got when I've been around the service parks is, you know, Toyota are there to, or Toyota Gazoo Racing, rather, to give them a full title. They were going there to win. They weren't going there to be, you know, just one of the teams in WRC. And Tommy's delivered. He really has.
He has delivered. And you think, end of 2016, when Volkswagen pulled out, Ogier went and drove that car and rejected it because it was so bad. And Tommy and his team took a massive slating from fans, media, anything, because Tommy and Juho Hannan were doing the testing. We had a program running in Japan. We had a program running in Germany with a Yaris World Rally car. Then we had a program running in Finland with a Yaris World Rally car. No one really knew what was going on. There was all sorts of confusion. And everyone was saying, it doesn't look very good. What's Tommy doing driving it? What's Hannan doing driving it? They haven't got a clue. Ogier's rejected it. Two rallies in, and it wins its first World Rally. It then went to win another one. Then you see they've won the Manufacturers' Championship. It, as you say, it was a bit of a shaky start, and they got a lot of criticism. But I tell you what, they turned it around very, very quickly. And I think Latvala has to take credit for that, because he brought a lot of ideas from Volkswagen. And he told me if he'd arrived 10 days later, they would have had to use a load of jokers to get the car better. They just happened to get him still before final homologation, and they could adjust diffs, suspension, things like that. And the car was, it was on the pace. It was on the podium in its first rally. And fair play to them, you know. And they have had quite a few people going in and out of the doors. So if Hyundai, people move around, and probably too many people have gone in and out of Toyota's door. But the people who are there are so passionate and so keen. And, you know, Tommy's got Mr. Toyota right on board. Whatever they need, they get. And it's great. It's great. Toyota's one of the famous names in rallying, isn't it?
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. They say you don't know where you're going until you know where you've been. And in rallying, we love to reminisce. The cars, the legends, the style. And we're on a campaign to bring back service team headbands. Woo-hoo! Become a headbander. Find us on Twitter and Facebook to get involved. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Now, you've just mentioned him, a driver we've talked about repeatedly, and I likened it. You've just mentioned his time at Volkswagen, Jari Matti. And there was times this year where it took me back to his days in Volkswagen, where we had a very dominant Sebastian Ogier, and he was a beaten man. And there was times this year, from a fan perspective, from me watching all live and, you know, listening to some of the stage end quotes, I felt like we'd gone back in time almost.
Yeah, the first half of the season, yeah. He couldn't get it. He couldn't get, well, I mean, he was on the podium in Monte, but he just didn't seem to matter what he did. The smallest rock would break the suspension, or would puncture the oil sump, or whatever like that. Anything that could go wrong would go wrong. And he was like, I'm going to have to change my driving style. You know what I mean? That's not the easiest thing in the world. But then the new improved car came in at the mid-season break, and all of a sudden, it was just kind of like, here we go, he's off on a rocket ship. And GB, Spain, Latvala leading again on tarmac. It's not the Finn's kind of specialised subject, it's tarmac. And Latvala was right there. Then again, he's there in Australia in the fight. And if we did an interview with him on Sunday after the rally. He said, this is the best finish to a season I've had in about 4 years. He said, I normally crash out in the final round and I go into the winter break on a downer. And he said, and I had to pick myself up for Monte. He said, this is the first time I'm going to go into a new season having had a good result in the final round. He said, in 4 or 5 years. He said, that just gives me so much confidence. And they've got a strong team. They have a strong team next year. And now he's only 33, you know what I mean? He's been around for years, but he's still only 33. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because Tanak is on a big charge. Chris Meekle want to put his assertiveness in there. And yeah, it's interesting. Tommy's only got one Finn left in that team now. He had three of them last year, and he's only got one now. One that's been there, done it, and not quite got the T-shirt. But it'll be interesting to see how the dynamics work in that team next year.
Were you surprised that, you know, we speculated on this program just briefly, you know, we were very impressed by Lappi last year, and we kind of guessed a little bit. Well, it was a complete nutter guess that perhaps earlier this season he'd have his head turned elsewhere, because he didn't seem to have the same spring in a step. Now, obviously, you encounter these guys all the time. Were we off on that assessment, Jules?
Well, we interviewed him on Monday before Rally Australia about his season review, and he said it wasn't the season he wanted. I said, did you expect to win this year? You won one rally last year. And he said, I expected to win more than once. And he says, and I got two podiums or three podiums or whatever. He said, it just hasn't been the year I've wanted. Now, why that is, not really sure. Tanak has been very strong. Tanak's come in, stamped his feet, kicked the bins around, got stuff sorted. And Lappi's only in his first full year this year. But yeah, I think Citroën came calling quite early on, and I think he thought, they've got Yari Matti, El Statesman, they've got Tanak. Yeah, this is going to be difficult for me. I might make a break for it and go somewhere else where I can be the number one. Now, that has slightly backfired on him because they've gone and caught the world's number one, not just number one in the team, the world's number one now joining him. Now, he could look at it two ways of, like conversations I've had with him about it. And we see it, we've seen it at M Sport. If Elvin Evans, no disrespect to Elvin, if Elvin was to shout or swear at Malcolm and say, I need this, Malcolm might sit there and think, okay, let's see what we can do. But when Sebastian Ogier shouts and swears, it happens. And Lappy's got to sit there now and think, I'm not number one because Ogier's in there, but for sure I am going to benefit from him being in that team because Ogier can kick a bit harder than anyone else and he will rattle some doors if it's not right. And Lappy will be the beneficiary of that because he will get the same on his car. And Lappy's in a no-lose situation. If he gets beat, he's being beat by a six-time world champion. If he beats Ogier, he's beating a six-time world champion. And he's just got to go in there with that mental attitude of, I'm not going to be losing here. I've just got to stay close to him or beat him. And people will be able to judge him on that. So I think once he gets into it, he'll be all right. I think he's maybe feeling a bit sore right now because he maybe thought it was going to be his team, and it's not. But I think he'll be all right. He is one of the coolest customers in the thing. He comes over maybe a bit arrogant, but he's not. He's great. I think he's brilliant. He's great for TV anyway.
Well, actually, I loved the stage ends last year, and there was a period this year, and we started kind of speculating a little bit that it just felt like he'd had his head turned, and you've just kind of confirmed that maybe Citroën came calling a little bit earlier this year, so we weren't a million miles off.
But also I think he had a teammate who could take 2 or 3 tenths of a second, 4 tenths of a second per kilometre out of him, as in Tanak. And there's nothing worse. You get to the end of the stage, you look at the timing board, and your teammate's third on the road, and you're sixth on the road, and he's going to whop you by 7 or 8 seconds in 6Ks, and you're thinking, how does he do that? And it's the same car. How does that happen? And it does start to eat your insides. You've both been there. It eats your insides, and you sit there thinking, like, how is he doing it? What's going on? Is he getting special treatment? Is he just a better driver? What is it? And I like this. We've got some driver changes. I do like that for next year. Move a few people around. That's always good. Keeps us fresh.
Well, we're going to talk about M Sport in a second, but before we leave, we've just touched upon Citroën the Citroën story for this year. Aside from what happened with Chris, we won't go too deeply into that, but aside from what happened with Chris, it's possibly been one of the most un-Citroën-like seasons ever.
Yeah, quite a few different drivers in the car, changing around. One win, at least they did win. They've had a couple of podiums. Mads has had two podiums, Craig had one. So Craig was massively affected by having to bail out the car so early on in the season, like rounds 3 and 4. He just finished second in Sweden, which is a huge achievement for a Brit. Or an Irishman, well, I'm not saying that, but for a non-Scandinavian anyway, you know what I mean? A European, a non-Scandinavian finishing on the podium and finishing there on pace, not just because everyone else fell out, but being there on pace. And then he has to sit out in Mexico and then his favourite rally in the whole season, Corsica. And by the time you get back, yeah, he's helped with road position in Portugal and Sardinia, but it's kind of gone then, you know what I mean? The momentum's gone And then he had this terrible run of luck on Friday. Punctures, differentials, transmissions, whatever it was. Anything that could go wrong went wrong. And it was only really GB where that he got rid of that problem. Was running in fourth and just made a little error on Sunday morning, trying to keep up with a huge championship fight that was going on. And, and then his bad luck came on in Australia. I mean, cranky. And I think he had a spin on every stage on the Sunday. He had some moment on every stage on Sunday, 6 stages, and it was just so treacherous. I mean, virtually everyone had moments, but Craig just couldn't seem to do anything right. And I'm not sure where what Craig's doing yet next year. He was very, very buoyant in Spain, saying that he will be around. But I don't know. I've heard nothing more. I mean, there's Craig, there's Lance, there's Elvin, Hayden, Danny. I mean, I thought Danny's deal was going to be announced after Spain. I'd heard that Danny was doing near enough 10 rounds, but that's not been announced yet. But we'll see. Hayden's very, very in with Hyundai New Zealand. He won't want to move because of all the New Zealand stuff he does with them. So I'm not sure. I really don't know. But, I mean, Craig has been thrown a bit of a lifeline if they get the budget in Citroën to run a third car, which would incorporate Loeb. So he might be able to, Loeb might do four or five, and then Craig would do the rest. But they're waiting for that money to be kind of assured from Pierre Boudard said to us in Australia. He said, we're still working to try and get that backing from the board that we can run the third car. But I don't know. But Craig's had a tough year. I mean, Sweden was an awful long time ago now when he had that podium. And there's been stage wins and things like that, but it's just not quite coming. His teammate, who has done half the season, has finished on the podium twice. And Mads has backing if it's needed.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that, Julian. You know, like Mats has come in, and yes, we know Mats has got back in, and he's been around the World Championship for a long time, and we tend to think of him as a steady, reliable driver. But he's never going to set the world alight. But he's had a pretty good second half of the season, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well, what, get a podium in Finland. That's equally as special as getting a podium in Sweden. But Finland was up against a Toyota that was 1-2-3 at some points last year on the event. He was up against Latvala, who's won it three times, in a Toyota on their home ground, and he did Latvala. That's pretty big. That's pretty big. And then, he wasn't far away in GB. Then in Australia, he was in the game. He led Friday. Road position was favourable. But he took advantage. We've seen many drivers this year who have not taken advantage of their road position. Mads had the road position, took advantage of it, led. Then got drawn into the mixed tyre choice on Saturday with the weather. It was so changeable, the weather, and the rain was coming every day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They just kept moving around. And he took a medium and a hard compound mixture. And it's just something he doesn't enjoy. He just doesn't like it. And immediately he was dropping time. Whereas if he decided to either stick with a medium all round or a hard all round, he potentially would have kept himself in the game. And what I'm saying, kept himself in the game, which would have ended up being a battle for victory with Latvala, because that's who he was fighting with. So he's had a very good season, a real good season. And the more he drives the car, but yeah, he can supply money if he needs to through the companies that he's associated with. So that's always a problem for people like Elvin and Craig, who maybe can't supply them. I don't think Elvin can supply any money, and whether people should be expected to supply money at that level, I don't know. But unfortunately, there is some commercial deals done, and people who can't bring money can get pushed down the order when you get to this time of the year and looking for drives.
And particularly, you know, now looking ahead to 2019 with M Sport, you'd have to say it's likely to favour drivers with some backing, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, Sunderland has a deal for 2019, and he has backing. Timo Jokke backs him. I feel, rightly or wrongly, that Elvin does deserve another year, but I'm not paying the bills. You know, I'm not Malcolm Wilson. I have to find the however many millions it costs to run that car for a year. But Elvin's done a lot of stuff for this year for M Sport. You know, Elvin Evans, you could put Sebastian Ogier, Julian Ingrassia as world champions, but underneath you could put in brackets Elvin Evans and Dan Barrett, because of, like, in Sweden they dropped, granted, 1 point. They dropped one place at 1 point to give that to Seb. Then in Turkey, they helped advise Seb on how to fix the car. Finland, they dropped back. I think Germany, they dropped again. Then they dropped again in GB. In Australia. And just those things, you can't work it out exactly how many points he helped Ogier with, because how many would Ogier have got if he'd been running second or third on the road in Australia on Saturday rather than fifth? You don't know. But Elvin definitely massively contributed to the team game this year. Now, it's a tough sport. It's a business at the end of the day. Whether that gets Elvin a drive next year, I'm not sure. But what he's going to remember is he's a rally winner. He's won a world rally. They're not easy to win. He's been there, done it. And he's probably quite low maintenance, so to speak, is Elvin Evans. I think he turns up, he does the job, he goes home, doesn't really go around like shouting and bawling. So he's probably good to have in your team. But whether that's enough, if there is people with budget around, I don't know. But if he kept his drive, I wouldn't be disappointed. And I think he probably warrants being in the World Championship.
I mean, that brings us nicely round to Elvin's teammate, Sebastien Ogier, so world champion again. And he just really proved his class once again, didn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, he won three rallies out of four at the start of the season. You kind of, I sit there now thinking about it. After Corsica, I'm thinking, this could be a whitewash. Dear me, this could be. And then they got hit hard. Portugal, Sardinia running at first on the road. Then he got beat in Sardinia on the final stage, leading going up to the final stage, got beat by Nouvelle. That hit him hard. And in an interview we did with Ingrassia at the end of the rally on Sunday afternoon before the press conference, he said, we were riding the crest of a wave after Corsica. And he says, we maybe just took our eyes off the game. And he says, we maybe just thought, this is quite easy. He says, we got hit. And he goes, then he says, Turkey, he said, we kind of felt like superheroes because we'd fixed the car and we won the next stage. He said, we got slapped in the face by making a mistake on a second gear corner, uphill second gear, 90 left. And he goes, that was the real thing of like, this is going away from us, boys, if we don't sort ourselves out. And for me, the key point of Ogier's World Championship, you never wrote him off. You never wrote him off, even when he was 27 points down, because you knew what he could do. But the key point, there was one key stage in the whole championship where, for me, the championship turned, and that was the Great Orme first time on Sunday in GB. He went into that stage having just been whopped by Latvala and Gwadir in the power stage, and it was kind of like, Latvala's going to do this. Latvala's going to do this. Ogier can't afford to lose these 7 points from first to second. Latvala's going to win this rally. And Ogier went into the Great Orme, gravel tyres, gravel suspension on tarmac, and whopped Latvala. In time and psychologically, Latvala didn't have time to recover. Gwadir, Ogier went and did him again. And that was it. Game over. There's two stages, but particularly the Orme first time. Ogier knew he had to do it there and then. And psychologically do Latvala to get that win. And for me, that from that point onwards, he knew he could win the World Championship. I really believe that. And he just got stronger and stronger and stronger and didn't let anything go.
Jules, when you were speaking to the drivers before, we had with Dean Herrigan, who was doing the start ramp duties last week, and I posed a question to him as well. Did you sense, and I know that these guys are professional and everything, did you sense a chink in the armour of any of them? You know, did you look into the eyes of Sebastien Ogier and think, yeah, he's worried?
Not Ogier, no.
No.
Because he's just, the class of him, the times that he's just come, running at the front. I mean, he went to Australia running first on the road. And Nouvelle said at the end of Spain, because we now interview most of these drivers after the rally. So anyone who wins a world rally now has to come to an interview session with WRC TV. And then in the last three rounds, we have done the three championship contenders as well. So we've seen them, and Nouvelle was after Spain. He was like, this is in my favour now. I'm second on the road. I've got it now. It's because I'm not running first on the road. Ogier was like, I'm happy running first on the road. Not got a problem. And you genuinely believed it. When he said, I can still win this running first on the road, you knew he could, because he's done it so many times. He is the greatest driver running first on the road. He manages everything perfectly. Tire wear. He can run a soft tire when no one else can, and he can make it last a loop because he just looks after everything. And you just sit there thinking, how does he do it? You know what I mean? You look at him in Mexico and places like that, and you're like, so now he does it. He's just phenomenal. And he is just fantastic, but he's so ruthless at the same time. He just is so hard on everybody around him, even though he's winning. And but it's all about winning. And, you know, he's transformed M Sport. Malcolm Wilson, I'll tell you, 2016, when Ogier joined, Malcolm says, when he joined at the end of 16 for 17, because he just gave the team belief that they could win again. You know, he said, we've been through so many years of not winning, we kind of just thought, well, we're never going to win. And he goes, now everyone believes, when they're building the car, that it's an almighty needed. It doesn't matter, because we can win. We can win. And he installed that winning belief into people. That's going to be tough for Malcolm next year, and maybe the year after, I don't know. But Ogier's left a massive legacy there. It's just phenomenal what he does. Yes, he was gifted a beautiful car in Volkswagen. Started to drive it, started to do it. But these last 2 years, I think, last 2 years at M Sport, Ogier's grown as a person, and I think his fan base has grown massively because of what he's done in a privateer team and how he's done it. Very likeable, smiling away, respecting what he's got, being respectful for the team. And I think Ogier's come out of these last 2 years way better and way bigger than he ever thought he would.
Now, one thing I just wanted to touch on going forwards is we see next year that there's going to be a candidate event for Safari Rally. Now, you're a fan of the sport like we are. Having Kenny back in the championship would be amazing. But do you think, and this is a question you know we've asked over the last few weeks, do you think a real Safari with character can be fitted into anything like a current WRC format?
It won't be like the. I mean, I was lucky. I went to two. I did 2001, 2002 safaris, which were like what you do with the classic safari. You know what I mean? It was right. There's 100 k's. You're going from here to here. You've got a helicopter above you. You've got this. You've got that. You've got the mini buses coming towards you. You've got pickups driving around. We're never going to go back to that. We can't go back to that. The candidate rally that ran this year, it was in private reserves, so they could close places off and things like that. So we're never going to get a safari like we had. But as you know, Ryan, even those private game reserve roads, they're still demanding, they're still rough, they're still tough. And it would just give the championship a big boost. And unless they make an almighty mess up with their candidate rally next year, they will be in 2020. Along with Japan.
Jules, Rai's got a vested interest. I don't know why. I think he might have won it. I think that's possibly why he's asking about the classic safari. But
I love.
I didn't mention classic.
Africa's my favourite continent in the world. I absolutely love the place. It's just, but we will never go back to an open format, open road format. We just can't. The drivers would never allow it. You know what I mean? They would never allow it. And I don't think we could. I don't think the teams could afford to run helicopters like we used to run and things like that for all of the teams, all of the drivers and stuff. But I think let's get there. I mean, from what I can gather, the candidate rally was a success this year. They've got another go at it next year. But unless they make a real hash of it in 2019, they will be in 2020, as will Japan. So, I mean, we've been to Japan before, we've been to Africa before, but they're coming back as far as I'm aware.
This kind of relates to where I was going to go anyway with M-Sport. We had Rich on just before they flew out to Australia. Now, again, we all know what was at stake, you know, leading up to Australia. There was, you know, three drivers. And I kept saying there was three drivers. I didn't get sucked into the two driver thing. Did you notice anything on the three cars, Jules, that was different? Because I asked Rich, I said, what have you done? Is, you know, surely there must be something, there must be, you know, have you beefed this up? Have you done that? Has it got, you know, a bigger sump guard or anything? And Rich didn't give anything away because Rich is the total professional as ever. Did you notice anything on the cars for this particular event where you think, yeah, I can see why they've done that? They've, you know, this car's been built to get through or, you know, built to finish or whatever.
No, I didn't see anything. I mean, it's quite interesting because we discussed that within the TV of will they have done stuff differently? And I don't believe they would have done anything any differently, because in theory, you send every car out for every rally in the best possible spec you can. M Sport, they were going to go with the fresh engine for Ogier, the new updated engine, the 2019 engine, and they didn't take that. That car, from as far as I was told, was as it had been, like, during Spain, Turkey, GB, or whatever. Hyundai turned up with a fresh engine for Nouville. They had their 2019 engine in Nouville's car. They threw everything at it. They had one joker available left for this year, so they put out into a new cylinder head on the Nouville car. So it gave them a little bit more power, just a little bit of everything. And they threw that at Nouville. It was only him who had it. Toyota, they didn't have anything other than the cars were no different what they had been the previous rallies. So it was only Hyundai who threw something at it. That was a fresh engine. And, yeah, it was it. But
the benefit of hindsight, Jules, and I've asked everybody this, we asked Chris last week, we had Dino and everything else. We're now looking back as opposed to looking forward. Were you confident that Ogier was going to win the championship?
Yeah. From GB on, from the Great Orme onwards, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Just of what he did that day, he dug so deep. And he said in the press conference before Australia, he said to Bex, he goes, if I don't win the world championship, it doesn't change my life. He said, because I've got five. That wasn't arrogance or ignorance. That was just, I've got five. If I want six, don't get me wrong. But it's not going to really make any difference to me. But it was GB. You saw how deep he dug and what it meant to win that rally and get those extra points. And he sat there, and I sat there, and I just thought, he's going to win the world championship now. And everyone was like looking at me going, yeah, but he's so far behind still. I think that he's going to win the world championship, because he's psychologically done them all over on Sunday, like in five stages, but in three stages, he did them all over. And yeah, I didn't know, but I had a feeling from that point on was that the others were going to have to be pretty special, or Ogier was going to have to make a big mistake. And he doesn't make many of them. He'd already made two, Portugal and Turkey. Ogier normally only has one or two bad rallies a year. So he had three this year, Sweden, Turkey, and Portugal. They were his bad rallies.
Do you think, you mentioned this a little bit earlier on, but you went from the clinical, the machine that was, it's a very, very easy stereotype to say, the clinical German machine that was Volkswagen to we all know what M Sport is. M Sport is a phenomenal facility when you go and visit and everything else, and this is nothing against M Sport, but it's a lot more, dare I say, family-based than what a Volkswagen Motorsport team would be. And do you think he bought into that very, very early? And that's what, there was tears on the podium from Malcolm, and, there was almost, there was reference to the fact that it was like leaving the girl that he loved, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think he, that's what kind of made it so special, the fact that he bought into the family aspect? And, as you mentioned before, you've got guys doing all-nighters for him and things like that. Do you think he got that? Do you think that's what the difference was in the end?
He massively got that, and he loved being the underdog and succeeding massively. It was he didn't want to leave M Sport. He did not. He's kind of like, if a couple of other things had happened, he'd have still been there next year. Would have still been there. And we know that Ford Performance came in for this year, and I don't know the ins and outs, but if you read what Ogier says, that he kind of pushed them for a bit more for next year. Now, what people have got to remember is Ogier, when he's pushing these people, isn't necessarily pushing the people for money for himself, because he's got all the money he needs in the world. You know what I mean? His little boy is never going to want for anything in his life. Ogier's been there, done it, earned his money. He still warrants his whatever it is, 5, 8, 10 million euros a year, depending on who you listen to and who you believe. But he wanted that development consistently and constantly. We need this. And it was like you'd go to Malcolm and say, I need this. I need to go to Ford to get it. And it was kind of like, they never said never to him, but it was always kind of like, are we going to get it? Whereas it's because it wasn't like a manufactured team as such, there was always another door to knock on to get the final bit, so to speak, as from what I can understand. And I think if it had been a bit more involvement from Ford for next year, if they'd come in with a bit more money, and whether we're talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 million, I'm not sure, but if they'd come in with more, I think Ogier would have stayed. He's got everything he wants there. He's got a boss who absolutely adores him. He's got a team who absolutely adores him. They'd do anything for him. He's got very little pressure. He turned up. We did some filming with Ogier in Australia, and he was coming to us at 1 o'clock lunchtime to do this filming in the cinema. The opener for the programme that you might have seen.
Yeah. I watched it last night. Yeah.
He turned up at 1 o'clock. He only landed at 10:30 that morning. He went to the hotel, showered, changed, went and did some filming for Rally Australia at 12, came to us at 1, then went and played golf. Had lunch and played golf for the rest of the afternoon. He left. We did an interview with him at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. He had his World Championship press conference at 4:30. He was at Coffs Harbour Airport, I think, at 5:15, flying down to Sydney. He manufactured that with himself within Malcolm. You know, he left the press conference in Mexico. He got Ducati to drop off 2 motorbikes, 1 for him, 1 for Malcolm, so he could ride to the airport. He rode to the airport in his racing overalls. There was a guy from M Sport waiting at the airport for him with his bag and his passport and all that kind of stuff. He got changed. I don't know, the toilets, the lounge, the back of the van, I don't know. He got on a plane that night. And he arrives on a Monday and he leaves on a Sunday. No other team let a driver do that. But that was something that he manufactured within his package. He does 5 PR days a year. If he wins a world championship, he has an additional 5. Now, at Citroën, they do 2 or 3 in Buenos Aires alone before Rally Argentina. The guy, as well as all the other stuff they do, drive days here. Every Hyundai driver does at least 3 or 4 drive days a year after rallies. And, yeah, I don't know what he's worked with Citroën. I have no idea. But Citroën were paying him handsomely. He's the darling of the French in a French team. I got a feeling he'll be doing more than 5 or 10 PR days next year.
If we can vary, because I realise, Jules, we've had you for over an hour now. If we can just very quickly fast forward to an Ogier-led Citroën team, and potentially also Sebastian Loeb with a part programme, and you know, interesting reports over the last week or so coming out with regards to part programme drivers, you know, point scoring and things like that. Something which Sebastian Ogier and I think Thierry Neuville also is support them on. You know, they're very much against it. Could we be back to the old days of perhaps politics of play at Citroën Racing next year?
What, with Loeb being there?
Yeah.
I find it hard to see it happening, of Loeb being at Citroën with Ogier. But then I find it hard for Loeb to leave the PSA group, because he can be an ambassador for the rest of his life for the PSA group and earn a living, getting a nice income all year, every year, for as long as he wants it. And the reason why I find it difficult that Loeb will accept, We'll do some rally. And I do think he will, but I think he's going to find it difficult, because Ogier is going to rock up. Loeb probably has written himself now out of Monty by doing Dakar. Virtually written himself out of Monty. He can still do it, but it's going to be tough with no testing and all that. He won't do Sweden because it's so specialist and you need, again, a lot of testing. So the first event I think we'd probably see Loeb is Mexico, by which point Ogier could have won 2 rallies. Loeb turns up in Mexico running 10th or 12th on the road, is out front. He's not going to stop, is he? The team's going to tell him, oh, you need to slow down for the Ogier pass. He's not going to rock up for 5 or 6 rallies next year and be told to slow down to let his teammate win or look after the team at the team's benefit. So I find it just difficult that he might do a part program and do one if he's not allowed to win. Like, just think of it, if it had been Spain this year, like, let's say that had been Ogier, was his teammate, and Ogier's battling for a world championship, and Loeb was out front. Loeb would never have been allowed to win. They would have had to have made him slow down and let Ogier win. And Loeb's not going to want to do that. But I don't believe he'll want to do that. What's the point of setting up? Which then spikes the story of, does he go to M Sport for 5 or 6 rallies? Because that would be great for the world championship and the fans alike. It would be fantastic if Loeb went there for 5 or 6 rallies.
Yeah. Brilliant. It would be, but as you said, we often play fantasy manager on this particular podcast, and it's something we've kind of speculated on. But there is, you know, one thing we haven't got a lot of, and we haven't got a lot of drivers that can do what they can do. You know, you've mentioned before, yeah, we had 3 drivers. At the very, very, you know, they were on a different level, you know, Tanak, Sebastian Ogier and Thierry Neuville.
Different level.
And that's what's lacking. And, I think there was a lot of people when Loeb first came back, he had that, was it Mexico where he had the off? And, I think maybe 1 or 2 people kind of went, he's had his time now, and and then obviously he then comes back and wins. And I think that's what spiked the interest. I think, you know, it was such a sway of emotion that one time, you know, comes back, goes off. Yeah, he's had his time now. You know, he's just doing it for a bit of fun. You know, people like him don't do it for fun, do they?
No. And when you think back to when he was dominating, everyone wanted rid of him. Now everyone wants him back. It's kind of like, I think if you play fantasy manager, Chris Meek going to M Sport would have been the best thing. Because for me, Chris Meek is on the fringes of those other 3 we've talked about. He's not as consistent, but speed-wise, he's on the pace of those other 3. Now, unfortunately for us fans, Toyota got 2 of them. Then you've got Neuville in 1, and then 3 in Hyundai, and then 6 with Ogier. Leaves M Sport a bit kind of like a bit on the outside, and it'd be great if Chris Meek had gone there. Now, Chris did talk to Malcolm, of course, talked to Hyundai as well. He spoke to all the teams apart from Citroën, naturally, about coming back. And Malcolm just couldn't offer him something at the time when Chris was offered something at Toyota. So it's disappointing, I think, for us fans, because I think we'd have loved to see him in M Sport. Because that would have given M Sport a really strong driver. Sunderland will be very, very good. He is very good. He will be very, very good. And then whether they use Elvin or Craig or Mads, I'm not really sure. But in a perfect world, we could have done with either a Laffey. If Ogier was always going to go to Simpson, either a Laffey or a Meek going to M Sport, just to keep them strong in that performance. But the driver is king again. This is what I was saying to Malcolm a couple of rallies ago, and he goes, yeah, you know, the drivers are getting big money again, and they're in demand, because as you said, Tony, there's a lot of them, but there's only 3 or 4 of them who are right at that level for the whole weekend.
Yeah, it is. Again, coming full circle, I think... from a purely as a fan, being able to watch the all live coverage and listen to obviously the analysis from the likes of yourself and stuff like that, and just seeing the stage ends. Obviously, we've been able to listen to stage ends for many, many years, but actually watching them and seeing those guys of what they go through, and obviously the psychological things that each and every one of them. You know, we all know Craig wears his heart on his sleeve. You know, we've seen Gary Matty go through a whole mix of emotions throughout this year and everything else. And I just think we're in the cusp of something very, very special. And I think it's been a privilege to watch it this year. And I'm sure it's been a privilege to watch it for you. And if I can just ask you one last thing, because I'm really conscious of time. Rye mentioned before, of course, about Safari, and you know, we know Turkey was a tough event. Do you think we need to get back to having some tougher events in WRC and not make them as much as sprints, even though we have got these, you know, 400 horsepower plus, you know, monsters now? Do you think there is an element now of needing events to mix up, not necessarily just having a sprint?
I'm not sure whether we need to change the format, so to speak. What we've got to remember is that there's television, there's journalists, there's teams, and the format we have now, the 3 days, central service and everything, that works for a whole load of reasons. But what we do need is rallies that are a bit tougher than each other. And you look at Turkey. We were driving through those stages, and I'm thinking, they're going to cancel this one. There's no way the teams that can drive are going to accept this, because it wasn't manicured. It was just a mountain road over the top. But no one complained about it. That's part and parcel of it. They'll get on with it. It was a battered car. You then go to Wales Rally GB, and they spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on manicuring those roads. Wales Rally GB, you've done it, Tony. You could drive around there in a two-wheel drive road car on a recce and not have a single concern.
Not when Tony gets there, Jules. You forgot that bit.
Well,
The recce's a different thing.
But it is unbelievably beautiful. Mexico, you drive to a stage in Mexico, Sardinia, the access road to the start line is like a war zone, and you get to the start line and the road is brand new. And they are spending, even these events are spending hundreds of thousands of pounds and euros manicuring the roads to make them as smooth as possible and to make them as quick as possible. But then you get a Turkey, Argentina. The drivers are like, oh, God, Argentina is so rough. And you're trying to think, when I was competing 20 years ago, that was what it was like. You know what I mean? You go to Kielde, and it's just a load of rocks thrown across the top of the road. You're thinking, that's what it's like. So you do need some changes. Turkey was a big change. Argentina, Sardinia on the second pass can be rough. We will get that when we get to like a Kenya as well. It'll be just different. It'll be demanding. But I tell you now, every team will want to go to Kenya and want to go to Safari, and every team will want to win it, because their advert on Monday morning afterwards was, we've won the world's toughest event. That would mean so much to them. You know, and at the end of the day, we keep forgetting about it, but it's a selling product. That's what they're doing, it, that motorsport and rallying, to sell their product. And they're paying drivers a fortune to get the best to try and win, so they can sell Hyundai's, Ford's, Citroen's, Toyota's, whatever it is, Skoda's, Peugeot's, whatever they're marketing, R5's, WRC cars. And it's just one big advert. And we sit there as fans kind of forgetting a little bit about that. But we just need some rougher rides. I'm not saying we need to change formats. It wouldn't matter to me if it was a two-day event or a four-day event. At the minute, we can have 3 days, or if you want to call it 2.5 days, and they're still battling for 10th of a second at the end of it. If we went longer, you might end up with rallies being won by 2, 3, 4 minutes. And people are honestly a bit boring, because we've had 2 or 3 years where it's been less than 10 seconds on most events. So we've got to keep that element of competition right in it as well, even if we want to have the adventure of the endurance. Rallying has changed a lot in the last few years. It really has. And that's come through teams, organisers, promoters, whatever. But right now, I think we can all agree, we've had a fantastic 2 years, an amazing 2 years. Do we really want to mess around with it too much? I'm not sure.
That is the best way we could have finished this section, Jules. You've just succinctly wrapped it up.
No problems.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we don't get you on enough, and we'll let you go and rest your voice now. Have you got a countdown on your calendar to how many days to Monte Carlo?
Yes, I saw someone, EGLD tweeted, was it like 56 days or something to Monte? Something like that. Yeah, that's good. We've got Autosport show before that with the launch of the World Championship, and holiday, a few little things to do, and then before we know it, 56 days isn't a lot when you think about it, is it? Before we know it, no. It'll be arriving in Gap, getting all ready, and winter testing. Oh, we can't wait. Everyone waits for winter testing and watching all the videos on YouTube and everything like that. So, yeah, it'll be good. It'll be
brilliant.
Good.
Brilliant. Listen, Julius, thanks so much for joining us. And as I say, we will get you on very soon. Folks, stay with us, and we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with Craig Parry, with what he's up to after, unfortunately, he had to retire early from his career. But he's moved into something a little bit different, but almost the same. Stay with us and you'll find out more.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team, paying homage to heroes and legends of years gone by.
Spot on.
Dear God.
Have you had any problems with your car?
Not really, only between seat and driving wheel, that's all.
I can go.
No.
Yes, but I know I can.
But if you allow me.
No.
But of course, Kielder continue to push forward with the latest technology, producing cordless tools for the world of motorsport. Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. We gave out some names last week of who've got the answer or the conundrum to the voices and what the connection is that Kielder have put out there. And if you've got it, well done. If you haven't, keep trying. We're not going to announce the winners for another couple of weeks. So if you haven't got it, keep trying. You can have as many goes as you like. If you do try and bribe somebody that I've read out that's won it, I will find you, and in true Liam Neeson side, I will kill you. No, I won't. I just won't allow you to win. Anyway, before we finish this week's podcast, it was important to get on a friend of the show. We've not had one for a while, and he's been through the mill a little bit. We're gonna talk to him about that on another particular podcast. But Craig Parry, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Good afternoon.
Well, you know, I was minding my own business, Craig. I got MN today, the digital version of it, and then I start scrolling down, and then I see, hang on a minute, there's Craig Parry's face there. You look like if you're very concentrated, I'll give you that. But it's telling me that you and Killian Duffy have linked together, and you've put something together, and it's called On the Pace Note UK Company. Tell us all about it, mate. I'm fascinated by this one.
Yeah, so am I. Basically, this was something that me and Killian tapped on in back in 2013, but he was in the early days of his own business, and I was still competing at, you know, quite a fair level of competition with the amount of events I was doing in the years and stuff like that. So it never really kind of took off. And then obviously after the accident and the announcement that I wasn't going back, having to retire from the sport, he just basically dropped me a text message just to say that he was still interested in doing something together, and if I was, you know, the door was open. So it kind of kicked off from there, really, and then we'd had a few discussions, and I'd had spoken with Dave Everson about some ideas as well, and obviously, Jamie Edwards had been involved, and, you know, before we knew it, we were here.
Yeah, well, I suppose for the uninitiated, because obviously we have, you know, both, you know, competitors and obviously fans and stuff like that. You know, there's been various systems over the years where, you know, on non-recce events where you can buy a set of notes and you buy a DVD, and various companies have done it, and this is kind of, you know, similar format, but in a slightly more in-depth way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the format will still be the same. You know, we'll do a set of notes with various different systems. We'll do a two-view DVD, so you get a camera angle from the driver input and also from the screen of the road. And working with the Welsh Championship as well, we're able to do a survey of the stages like the day before the rally, so all our customers will basically be entitled to the update of the road condition, or if there's been any logging, or if there's been any bad weather, because obviously we'll be making the notes maybe 3 or 4 weeks in advance to the rally. So in that aspect, it's almost like having their own little gravel crew.
Yeah, absolutely. Is this, Obviously, you know, you've made notes for a number of years now. You've sat with so many drivers. You know, I only mentioned this the other week on the podcast. You know, there's some of the drivers that you have sat with and the career that you had, which, you know, which has unfortunately been cut short. But is this something where you're going to be able to bring, obviously, experience of different systems and obviously different drivers and what drivers want? Is that what you're bringing to the party in this?
Not so much. I think Killian has that all fairly sewn up. You know, he's very, very... The consistency of the notes was the biggest thing. So it doesn't matter what you get from one event to the next. You're going to get exactly the same thing from, you know, the start of the year to the end of the year. My sort of input would be with more like the experience of the stages and stuff like that. Maybe, you know, knowing the danger points and also the surface as well, which can be, as we know, with like Wales Rally GB stages, when they're wet and slippery, they can be treacherous. So for him not actually knowing the stages as well as maybe I do, then, you know, there's that kind of input as well, really. But no, I just think we'll bounce off each other. I mean, he's mega enthusiastic about the job, even, you know, what he's been doing in Ireland, and his enthusiasm rubs off on me as well. So, you know, I'm mega excited about the job.
Perfect. Well, moving forward, so obviously this is going to be for crews that are tackling the Welsh Championship. Obviously, they've got to be registered as a Welsh Championship competitor, and that opens up this particularly unique opportunity to work with a new system almost.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we've never... This is all very new to me. We're working with a championship from this angle. But again, Dave, he's very enthusiastic about the whole thing. He's got a bit between his teeth with the junior program as well. So we're going to kind of get involved with that. So if you're registered with the Welsh or the Pirelli MSA Welsh National Championship, you know, we'll be doing some classroom work throughout the year, and some other opportunities will come along. We haven't actually got it down and done and dusted it yet, but there's some fantastic ideas floating about for the, especially the junior competitors throughout the year.
Does that appeal to you as well? The mentoring side of the job, you know, which is something which is, you know, we all talk about driver coaching, and some people are comfortable talking about it, some people are not. But not a lot is actually said. I know the MSA do something, but, you know, not every co-driver goes through that. You know, the percentage of co-drivers that go through the MSA system is very, very small. Or rather, UK Motorsport now, we're under the rebrand, I don't quite know how that's going to work. But anyway, you know, the mentoring side of it, does that appeal to you as well?
Yeah, there's actually something in the pipeline already with that for probably early February next year, where we're just going to be running a minimum amount of courses, maybe 3 or 4, just to see how it goes, really. And that'll be myself and Jamie Edwards involved with that. And again, like you've just tapped on, the opportunities for people to get advice. And I remember when I was starting out, you know, to get the advice and to be pointed in the right direction was, well, almost like non-existent for the early part of my career. Okay, I was mentored by Phil Mills for many years, and that was a massive help for me, and I can kind of think that's what gave me a little bit of a drive to go into this as well. But it's not just that. It's like over the years, we've looked for people for certain jobs within the World Championship, either gravel notes or stuff like that, and there's nobody that really kind of stands out to us. And even for other jobs, like co-driving jobs that came about in some aspects of the sport as well, you never really had anybody that stood out. And I've always felt there's been quite a big gap between national rallying and the World Championship. So, you know, if you can maybe help somebody, point them in the right direction, or give them some advice of something they may not have seen before or heard of, you know, then I'm all for it, really. And like I say, you'll probably hear a bit more about that in the coming months, really.
Okay, we'll talk about that. But as we started talking about right at the top of this, is that obviously Welsh Series. When does the Welsh Series get underway, Craig?
It's a Cambrian.
That's the first round. Wow, okay. Yeah. So going back to Rally GB stages for you, which will be quite unique, GB stages that have only just been used on the Cambrian. So a nice banker, you'll at least know those stages a little bit.
Yeah, it won't be unfamiliar territory for sure. So no, it's an ideal one to get started with, really. And I have a very good knowledge of the stages. I think we've done GB like 9 times or something now. So
wow.
Yeah. No, it'll be a good one to get our teeth stuck into, and Cambrian's a great event to start with as well. So, and it's also the first round of the British Championship.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, isn't there? There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. Yeah. Well, listen, Craig, thanks for coming on and talking about this. And, you know, we are going to get you back. We spoke about this before. We'll get you back early part of the new year to talk about some of the new ventures and obviously what brought you to this decision. You know, it was an unfortunate decision, but what brought you to this as well. And obviously, you know, as one door closes, another one opens, and we wish you the very, very best of luck with it anyway.
Thank you very much. Look forward to it.
Happy days. Folks, that has been episode 7, season 14 of Absolute Rally. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.